It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, CARES, provides more than $2 trillion in grants to individuals and families, as well as support for businesses and nonprofit organizations. Now, State Attorney General Josh Shapiro has begun the PA CARE package. Briefly, how does this complement the federal program? What's missing?
Well, good to be with you, and I hope you and your listeners are all healthy and safe. I have talked and heard from so many Pennsylvanians who are heeding the warnings from Governor Wolf to make sure to keep themselves and their loved ones safe, but also battling another massive challenge right now, and that is economic insecurity, the loss of the job, the loss of a loved one's job. And so many are struggling with making sure they can care for their families and put food on the table while also realizing that they can't make a mortgage payment, they can't make a car loan payment, and so on and so forth. And tough out, there's got to be a way where we can work with the banks and the other financial institutions in Pennsylvania to protect those who are struggling right now. And so I came up with this idea of the Pennsylvania CARE package, which includes a 90-day grace period on mortgage payments, a 90-day grace period on payments for consumer loans like car payments and things like that. A 90-day window with none of those annoying fees, right? Late fees, overdraft fees, insufficient fund fees. A 60-day hold on all new foreclosure sales and auto repossessions. And making sure that no late or missed payments would be reported to the credit agencies.
Was this missing from the federal package, sir? And you thought this would be a good addition? Or was this a bridge to get to the federal relief when it arrives?
This goes beyond what was contained in the federal package. And so I went to PNC Bank, which is obviously a huge institution based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's largest bank. And they joined up and agreed to be a part of it and agreed to be the lead bank on this. And as a result, we now have a number of other banks from across the state, from regional banks like First Commonwealth, to Dollar Bank, to PNC, to a number of other big banks that we'll be announcing. And I just genuinely appreciate these financial institutions stepping up to help those who are in need. And for those who need to take advantage of this, all you have to do is call your financial institution directly if they're participating in the Pennsylvania CARE package. And if not, feel free to put some pressure on them to join us in this effort. My sense is that many banks will join our effort.
So the grace period on mortgages and consumer loans like auto loans and foreclosures, were they not included into the federal, that, or was this just to support what was done in the federal package?
So we built it on some of the good work that was done in Washington, but really what we did was we made it Pennsylvania specific. We went further. I really believe fundamentally that we have to do more in this country to protect consumers. And so we're leading by example here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
You mentioned eviction as well. And of course, the temporary halt on foreclosures. What about preventing people who rent from being evicted from their homes? They don't have mortgages.
We've put out guidance to the landlords all across Pennsylvania, here in Western Pennsylvania, across the Commonwealth, stating that they could not evict someone during this disaster declaration. They cannot. And I urge them to agree to stop evictions, even in the weeks after the disaster declaration has ultimately been lifted, because people are going to need some time to get back up on their feet. The good news is the Pennsylvania Apartment Association, which is the large trade organization for the landlords, agreed to hold off on evictions until July 15th, figuring that that would give people enough time for a buffer. We can reevaluate, obviously, if things change. And that's an important thing that all tenants need to know. You cannot be evicted. Now, it doesn't mean that ultimately you won't be responsible for making your rent payments. And it doesn't mean that if you can make your rent payments, you should stop. It just means that you can't lose the roof over your head during this crisis.
You mentioned that some of the items were already included in the federal package. Is this meant to get help sooner to Pennsylvanians than maybe the federal relief might do?
Exactly. We want to make sure that there's direct relief for Pennsylvania consumers starting now. So the day PNC joined, about a week ago, the Pennsylvania CARE package, is the day you could call PNC Bank and make that ask for the 90-day grace period on your mortgage payment, for example, or know that all of these fees were going to be halted. So it's immediate relief, immediate help for Pennsylvania consumers partnering with banks. And as you know from the work we've done in the past, you know, I really do believe in public-private partnerships. I think it when used effectively, they can have a much greater further reach than what government can do on its own. And so I'm really pleased that we were able to get this done.
Many of the people this program is intended to help were laid off by small companies, those designated as non-essential. How will PA Care help small businesses that maybe aren't being helped or as helped as much as they could be through the federal stimulus package?
Well, they will know that they can get some relief on their mortgage payments. They can get relief on other loans. And so it just goes beyond whatever dollars that they were slated to get from the feds. Obviously, the feds are going to provide real dollars for people who are in need. This gives them some additional breaks, some additional help while they work to get back up on their feet and hopefully protect their employees in the process.
Such as? Give us a specific, if you would.
If you're a small business or an individual and you've got all kinds of consumer loans that help you run your business, this gives you a 90-day grace period. So if you have 90 days where you don't have to make a payment on those consumer loans and you don't have to worry about, you know, repossessions or foreclosures in the process, that's money that you can invest to keeping yourself alive. That's money you can invest in your employees. That's money you can invest in other things that are necessary. So it allows you to shift some of that burden and hopefully use your resources to protect people's jobs and their welfare.
You mentioned some of the banks and financial institutions that have already signed on since the program started. How many financial institutions do you need on board to make this initiative as effective as you hope it can be?
Well, obviously, you have to have a mix between the regional banks that people use in their communities, First Commonwealth being an example of a really good regional bank in southwestern Pennsylvania. And you also want some of the bigger banks, you know, with big, you know, a lot of clients, PNC being an example of that. And if you combine the two, then you're going to cover a lot of Pennsylvanians. Obviously, the goal is to cover as many Pennsylvanians as possible. It's my hope that every bank would agree to join.
There now is consensus, Attorney General Shapiro, that if you go out, say, to a grocery store, and you're going to be around people, you should wear a protective mask. There have been some mask companies popping up online. Has your office been keeping an eye out for scammers trying to rip off consumers who are scrambling for protective masks?
We have. We're seeing more and more scams evolve since the governor issued his guidance on masks. And so it's something that we are paying close attention to. It's something that our joint task force with the United States Attorney in the Western District of Pennsylvania, Scott Brady, and I are paying attention to. And we won't let anyone scam a Pennsylvanian. I want to urge Pennsylvanians to be cautious when they're purchasing these masks. I also, you know, would suggest to them that for the kinds of masks that the governor was referring to, these are, you know, something you can make at home with materials you already have at home. I don't know that people need to go online and spend a lot of money for this. But if you see something out there that looks like a scam when it comes to masks, email us directly at scams@attorneygeneral.gov. In addition to that, for some of these bulk, you know, larger orders, you know, for institutions, we are seeing some overseas scams, some scams emanating overseas that we're paying close attention to, and we'll do what we can to combat them.
You said bulk. What do you mean? I mean, lots of masks or other items?
Correct. When institutions are looking to buy masks in large quantities, particularly the N95 masks, we have seen some examples of scams that have picked up on that, and that is something that we're paying close attention to.
Attorney General Josh Shapiro, thanks so much for your time.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. As the coronavirus continues to spread, there's growing concern that Black Americans are being hit hardest. 90.5 WESA's Ariel Worthy reports that there may be special concerns in Pittsburgh, where a report last year showed there are already treatment gaps for Black women especially.
Dr. Uche Blackstock says she's already seen signs that Black patients are less likely to be tested for COVID-19. Blackstock is a part-time clinical physician in New York and the founder of Advancing Health Equity, which helps healthcare providers address racial imbalances. She says the pandemic can make inequality more dangerous.
We are more likely to live in areas that have minority-serving hospitals. You know, the care that a Black patient with COVID received versus a white patient at a different institution is also something that we need to take into consideration.
The concern may become especially pressing in Pittsburgh, where Black women already struggle to get treatment. According to a report released last year by the city's Gender Equity Commission, a Black infant is twice as likely to die in Pittsburgh as a white infant. And Black women here are more likely to die from complications in childbirth than Black women in 97% of cities similar to Pittsburgh. Mimi Sharman is a doula, a trained advocate who works with mothers before, during, and after birth. It's her job to make their pregnancy experiences easy. She doesn't always get a lot of help. Sharman recalls one of her clients, for example, complaining about discomfort just after giving birth. Doctors and nurses told her it was just part of the birthing experience. It wasn't.
She started hemorrhaging, and, you know, then everyone runs into the room and then wants to take care of her. But if you would have just listened to what she had to say from the beginning, then we wouldn't have had to get to that point.
Sharman says if a white mother complained, she likely wouldn't have had to ask twice. Evidence suggests that is sometimes true. A study done by the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy found that Black patients were 15% less likely to receive medicine than white patients. Muffy Mendoza says such numbers don't surprise her. She's the founder of Pittsburgh Brown Mamas, a local support group for Black mothers. She says that participants asked where to find Black doctors so often that the community compiled a list.
African-American women are constantly looking for a Black doctor because we know that African-American practitioners are going to be more in tune with our cultural journey, with our language, and also with creating experiences for us that feel good.
Studies have shown that Black patients do feel more comfortable with Black doctors. In 2018, the National Bureau of Economic Research found that Black men were more proactive about seeking treatment when they were treated by a Black doctor. Ayanna Bridges is a doula too, and she says white hospital staff often do not listen to Black mothers.
I've had a nurse ask me, do you really think her pain is at 10? She said it's at 10, it's at 10. It doesn't matter what it is to you. If she's telling you it's a 10, it's a 10.
Jada Sherrell is CEO of Healthy Start, a public health organization that works to reduce the county's racial disparities in maternal and child health. Sherrell worries that in the wake of the report, too much attention will be focused on criticizing the health habits of Black women.
As a Black woman, talking about this report is triggering. So we really have to be careful of blaming and shaming women.
She says the focus should be on hiring a more diverse healthcare workforce, investing in facilities that treat Black women, and funding services by doulas and midwives. Unfortunately, COVID-19 has made the job of being a doula harder. Under protocols to limit the disease, hospitals are allowing only one visitor during the labor and delivery process, and no visitors can attend prenatal appointments. Dr. Blackstock, the New York physician, says that won't help women who are already at risk of being ignored.
I can only imagine that these sort of experiences may probably occur more often where patients feel like they're not being listened to because they don't have someone there advocating for them.
I'm Ariel Worthy, 90.5 WESA News.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. When it comes to this current crisis, there's wide consensus we need to save lives and go slow in rebooting the economy. That's according to a new national survey. It also showed that a majority of Americans believe that their communities will recover from the pandemic, and some believe they will emerge stronger than ever. Christine Herman of Side Effects Public Media and America Amplified reached out to people who participated in the survey and has this report.
77-year-old Nova Powell lives in rural Texas in a tiny town called Pettibone.
It's an intersection with a curve in the road and about five houses altogether.
He's a Democrat and overall not thrilled with the federal government's handling of the pandemic. But he says he's been encouraged by small acts of kindness, Powell's wife, Deb, has asthma. She uses a breathing device that requires distilled water. When the local grocery store ran out, they went out of their way to find a few gallons just for him.
That's the kind of people that are here, and their politics are very far removed from mine.
The new survey conducted at the end of March by Public Agenda, USA Today, and Ipsos finds Powell is among the majority of people who feel their communities coming together during this time. Nearly half of all Americans say they've been reaching out to check on elderly and sick neighbors. And more than two-thirds say they're contacting family and friends more than usual and rallying to support local businesses. There is a partisan split over the handling of the crisis, with Republicans more than twice as likely as Democrats to feel the federal government is doing all it can. Still, David Schleifer, the director of research at Public Agenda, sees some surprising agreement.
You see a lot of support for the federal government taking a very active role in fighting the virus.
People on all sides of the political spectrum say the federal government's main priority should be preventing the spread of the virus by expanding testing, pressuring manufacturers to help, providing businesses with loans and aid, and passing legislation for paid sick leave. But roughly 20% of Americans, including 49-year-old Republican Jean Vo in Mobile, Alabama, think avoiding a recession should be top priority.
If this drags on for months, the people lose their homes, families are split up, and it's going to be bad. So I really don't know that it's the right thing to do to completely shut down most of the economy to save lives.
With millions applying for unemployment in recent weeks, many who participated in the survey were already struggling, like Matthew Mullins in Grand Forks, North Dakota. The 25-year-old feels the government mandating paid sick leave would help protect everyone. Before he got laid off last month, he worked at a factory that processes potato products.
Very shortly before this all began, we had a coworker with the flu who wasn't willing to go home despite our protests.
46-year-old Rick Liske in Toledo, Ohio, had also recently been laid off from his job as a sous chef.
If you lost a job any other time, there's so many restaurants around, you can go find one. Now, it's just not that way.
Liske says as a gay man, the forced closure of restaurants and bars is a double whammy. Not only did he lose his job, he's lost his community.
You know, it's just not a bar. It's more of a community type deal, you know? It's kind of like being on Cheers where you want to go where everybody knows your name.
The one bright spot in all of this? Like many Americans, Liske says he's checking in more often with his elderly parents. And he says he's hopeful this crisis will breed compassion that will help those who are struggling make it through. I'm Christine Herman, Side Effects Public Media.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Today's show and past programs can be found at wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Helen Wigger, Kylie Kaczynski, and Megan Harris. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Please be safe, and I hope you have a good day of good news.